This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make TWiT even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This episode of Know How is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit. And by Unity, the free personal media server. With Unity, you can access, stream, and share any media stored on your computers from your mobile devices. For more information and to download Unity for free, visit getunity.com/knowhow. That's getyounity.com/knowhow. Today on Know How,
your questions, our answers,
Synology's brand new RT1900 AC router,
and Steve Gibson gives us the future of home security.
It's the TWiT show where we kick people in the face with a crane kick from Karate Kid.
Don't
I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next how many minutes we need, we're going to show you some of the projects that we've been geeking out with so you can take them home and geek out on your own.
Right. And you could see by our crane kick that we will be geeking out right here on the show.
Right, yeah. It's late, folks. Right now, I'm actually in Barcelona.
Really?
I'm time traveling right now.
Hola.
Yeah, hola.
¿Cómo estás?
¿Dónde está el baño?
El biblioteca.
San Diego. No, we wanted to put this together because Monday shows, as we've tried to tell people, are a bit lighter. They're not really buildy. They're not makery.
You don't have to go buy out parts to find it. Well, I mean, you could
sometimes
go out and buy
parts. Yeah, right.
You can follow along without having to.
But this is sort of, this is Know-How the 2.0 versus Know-How 3.0.
3.0?
Yeah, we have 3.0.
We're already gotten to 3?
I know, weird, right?
Okay.
Now let's get past that. What we wanted to do today is we wanted to answer some of the questions that people have been having about networking. It's been a hot topic, and I know that our know-it-alls really want to know how they should set up their home security, their home networks. That's a lot of knows.
That's a lot of knowledge.
That is a lot of knowledge. Now, let's go ahead and start this off with some feedback, because we actually had a very good question from a member of our community. Brian, what do you say?
All right, this one comes from Boss Jen.
We've had him before. Kadej. Boston.
Boston Kadej?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That works.
He asks, what is the difference between a router and a switch? I'm talking about home routers and switches, not those in enterprise environments. When does a router do the same work as a switch?
This is actually a fantastic question, because it used to be very easy to figure out what was the router and what was the switch. The router was the really expensive thing that you had in a data center somewhere, and the switch was, or actually it would be the hub, is the low-cost thing that you had in your home or SMB network. Not so much anymore, especially since, and actually Boston did specify that he wasn't talking about enterprise, but in the enterprise, I deal with a lot of gear that can be a router or a switch, and I have switches that do act like routers, and I have routers that can't act like switches.
So what difference does it make now anyway?
The difference is in how we design our network. When we think about routers, what we're really thinking about is going between networks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you have a network at your house, I have a network at my house, there's going to be a network I want to access in New York. I need a router because I'm stepping off my network into another network. So anytime I'm going between networks, I need a router, the functions of a router. Now, those functions can actually be done by a switch in some cases, but in most cases, you do need a higher-end piece of equipment that will run a little bit differently. We'll explain what that means.
Okay.
When I'm using a switch does technically, it routes packets. I mean, it does send the frames in the right direction, but it does it in a different way. It uses tables to figure out where things are on a network at any given time.
Okay. And can you directly, if you were going to connect to a switch from a router, could you do that like over the internet? Or would you have to go to another router to get to the switch?
You would go to another router. So you would go from router to router to the switch. So, there's going to be people who are going to be freaked out and they're going to be angry because, oh, you're giving them the wrong information, which is true because it actually is a lot more complicated than just saying this is a router and this is a switch. But the easiest way to remember this is if you are inside of a network, you're using a switch.
Okay.
If you are transiting between networks, you're using a router.
Okay.
Okay?
I've got that.
All right. Now, let's stay with that. Both routers and switches have different ways of finding the most efficient path to any given device.
Okay.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how a switch does it. I've got behind me a really poorly drawn network with 12 computers and 3 switches.
Okay.
Okay. And so I'm not even putting a gateway in here. There is no connection to the internet. These are devices that are talking to each other.
So this is like an example of like a local area network?
This is a local area network. We can assume that one of these switches is providing DHCP. So all these computers do have an address. They have an IP address. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize about a switch and their local area network. When I'm trying to contact a computer on my network, I might type, /192.168.1.40.
Right.
And I'm thinking what I'm doing is I'm actually talking to the computer called 192.168.1.40.
But you're not?
I'm not.
Oh.
Because this does not speak IP address. IP address is a layer that's added over the top.
Of what?
Of the physical address.
Okay.
I know. Now we're getting funky. Every network device, so be it a wired Ethernet port, right, a wireless card, a device that just had like a security camera, has what's called a MAC address, Media Access Control. It's a unique address. No other device in the world has it. Mm-hmm. And it looks like 6 sets of hexadecimal characters.
Okay, yeah, I've seen those before.
Yeah, so 00000011111.
Right.
That would be a MAC address.
Right.
Okay. That's what the Ethernet switch actually needs to talk to a device. It uses the physical address to figure out where it should be sending the frame.
And it does that automatically? It picks up the MAC address?
Yes, and we're gonna talk about that. That's how it talks. But because I'm using, I've never addressed a computer via the MAC address, except in certain cases.
I was going to say, I have when I was port forwarding.
When you were port forwarding, exactly. But most of the time, you will use the IP address, or you will use like the network name.
Yeah.
Those are overlaid on top of the physical address.
Okay.
And let me explain how this is going to work. So let's assume that everything gets shut off. So all the memory is cleared. None of these devices have been on. Now I turn everything on. Mm-hmm. And so all of these devices get their IP addresses. Or let's say they all have static IP addresses. Mm-hmm. And now computer 1 wants to talk to computer 10. Mm-hmm. The problem is it has no idea where computer 10 is. None of these switches have any idea of where computer 10 is, and it somehow has to forward a frame of information from this to that.
Well, how does it figure it out then?
This is how it's going to figure it out. Computer 1 is going to say, hey, I'm looking for 192.168.1.100. Does anyone know who that is?
Okay.
And what it does, it's going to send out a broadcast frame to FFFFFFFFFFFFF. That's universal. Anytime a device sends out a broadcast frame, what that does is it tells the switches that are attached to it, send this everywhere.
To find the device it's looking for.
To find the device. So one is going to send a broadcast frame into switch A. Mm-hmm. Switch A will rebroadcast that over all of the devices that are attached to it.
Okay.
And every device will hear it. Every single device attached to that switch will hear it. So computer 2 and computer 3 will hear it. They will not respond because they are not that address.
It doesn't match. Okay.
Right. Then it will go to switch B. And switch B will rebroadcast that to all of the devices that are connected to it.
None of them will respond.
None of these will respond because none of them have that IP address. But that broadcast also hits switch C. And switch C will rebroadcast that. Computers 9, 11, and 12 will not respond, but computer 10, which does have that address of 192.168.1.100, will reply, hey, I'm 192.168.1.100. I have the physical address of 00000011111.
Okay.
That will come back, go to switch A, go to computer 1. Now, here's the fun part. The way that switches become efficient is they actually have a table, a piece of memory that that allows them to memorize where devices are on the network.
Okay. Does that get cleared when it's turned off?
It does get cleared when it gets turned off. So it has to repopulate. But now that I have broadcast and I'm getting a response from switch, from computer 10, switch C now knows that computer 10 is connected to that port.
Right.
Switch A now knows that computer 10 is connected to the port that's connected to switch C.
But do any of the other ones know?
Not yet. They don't have to. Only the switches have to know.
Okay.
And then switch A will know that, or sorry, computer 1 will know that computer 10 with that physical address and that IP address is connected through that port, down to that port.
Right. And that's the most efficient way to get to that computer. Well, I mean, it's the only way.
It's the only way. Because once, I mean, the other way to do it is what we used to do with hubs. And hubs would just scream everything all the time. Very inefficient.
And, I mean, not to sidetrack too much, but wasn't it a hub that you recommended when you were trying to capture network data?
Yes.
Because it would just because it would send do that. Out everything?
It would repeat. And okay. So the thing about a switch is if you're not supposed to be getting the traffic, unless it's a broadcast traffic, it will not get to you. Okay. So if once I've got this is figured out. Computer 1 knows how to talk to computer 10 and vice versa.
Yeah.
The only devices that will hear the conversation are computer 1, switch A, switch C, and computer 10.
Okay.
But if I put a hub there, that would just keep repeating.
And send it out to
every
and
device.
You could, that's how you would catch it.
It's on the network.
Okay.
Right. All right, so that's how a switch works. Now let's talk about how a router works. A router is slightly different. Mm-hmm. A router does not use physical addresses. A router uses IP addresses.
Right.
Right? Okay. Because if I try to send a MAC address on the internet, no one will know where to find it.
Right.
Because
right.
That's not cataloged.
No.
And the reason why it's not cataloged is because imagine the network that a router has to deal with versus the network a switch has to deal with. In a switch, you have a table of memory that can store a couple of dozen, maybe a couple of hundred, maybe even a couple of thousand if you've got a really big switch of devices. Imagine I plug that into the internet, and now it needs to memorize tables of hundreds or thousands of millions
all over
of devices.
The place. Yeah,
there was not enough memory. You'd spend the entire internet's bandwidth just updating those tables all the time.
Okay.
So that's not what a router does. A router does not remember the physical address. The router today will use what's called BGP, that's Border Gateway Protocol, and it doesn't know where everything is located, but it knows the direction in which it might be located.
Okay, so it has an idea.
Yeah. So imagine, so these are no longer switches. These are routers.
These are now routers.
These are now routers, and which means I'm not using physical address anymore. I'm using IP address.
Right, which is what you would see like at your home with the local area network, the like 19.
Well, that's a non-routable address.
That's not.
I can't use that on the internet, but this would be like 208.67.222.222. That's a routable address. This router knows the devices that are immediately connected to it. And it knows, because of BGP, Border Gateway Protocol, it knows in what direction it should send packets that arrive to it that aren't for the devices that are connected to it.
Right.
So, for example, it gets a packet for 208.67.222.222 or on the domain of whatever.
Right.
It says, well, I don't have this, but according to my table, I think it's in this direction. I'm going to send you over to this router.
Uh-huh.
And that router will say, I don't have that device, but according to my table, I think it's in that direction. And you'll hop off to the next one. And that gets automatically updated. And this actually, this is a strength of the internet. It automatically finds the fastest path.
Wow. Okay.
Right?
Okay, the path of least resistance.
The path of least resistance. Huh. So do they do kind of the same thing? Yes. Yeah. I mean, to the layperson, to the person who's just looking at the technology, routing and switching seem similar.
Right.
But the scale is so much different.
Okay. And is that why routers have to be so much more powerful than switches? Or is the hardware similar in each?
It depends what you want it to do. I've played with routers that make horrible switches.
Right.
And I've used switches as routers.
Okay.
So, again, that's why people, there's going to be some people who freak out. They're like, oh, no, you're giving the wrong information. No, this is a generalization of what a router is versus what a switch is.
Okay. Because some of the routers we've been talking about more recently, they're just like little computers.
Tiny little computers. Yeah. That's essentially all a router or a switch is. It's a dedicated computer that does sorting.
Yeah,
sorts packets. It sorts frames, and that's what it does.
Okay. Phew. Well, I think I've got the understanding then. Now,
good, because in segment 3 we're gonna just piss off.
Oh, you're gonna obliterate that.
We're gonna obliterate that. We're actually gonna explain why that's a decent system. But the problem is that was all created at a time where we assumed everyone who might be on a network would be a good person.
That was a false assumption.
That was a false assumption, and we're paying for it now. And actually, we're going to have Steve Gibson come in and explain a way to fix what we broke.
Okay. All right? I think if anyone could do that, it's Steve.
It's definitely Steve. But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How, and it's DigitalOcean. Now, DigitalOcean is the easiest way to get your app or your service up and running on the internet. Oh, the old way of doing it would be to buy a server, maybe to buy some space in a colo, make a contract with an ISP to provide you with bandwidth, and if you're going to do financial transactions, to make sure that you've got a payment processor. Now, you could still do all that. That's perfectly okay. And yes, it's kind of fun to figure out how that works. But DigitalOcean takes away the need to do that because they've given us Droplets, a way to encapsulate that service, that server, that app, even that desktop, the way that we want it, and then scale it across all of their infrastructure. Now, DigitalOcean is the number one way for developers to get their creations out in the world. It's used by me. It's used by Aaron Newcomb. It's used by Randall Schwartz. You can deploy and configure your Droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You get to choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. You can select from one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js and get up and running quickly. Or you could build your infrastructure exactly the way that you want, with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in state-of-the-art data centers across the world. Now, it's scalable. And by scalable, I mean truly scalable. This is one of the things that I love about Droplets. I could start with just a little bit of CPU time for a few hours to see if my service is actually going to live in the real world. Maybe invite a couple of my friends to hit it, make sure that it can stand up to real-world traffic. And then with the slide of a slider in the user interface, I could deploy it across the world, across their multiple data centers. It really does allow you to grow and shrink exactly as you need. In fact, there's a project that Brian and I have been working on, but we want to show you how you could use DigitalOcean to make the ultimate Minecraft server, something that you could use just for a couple of your friends, but it expand to serve thousands of users across the planet, again, with nothing more than a couple of clicks in the UI. Now, you can use their advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. They've got an extremely active community, which is one of the things that I always look for, because when you've got happy users, users who like the service, they will comment, they will help others, and DigitalOcean has that in spades. Folks, it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. Why not try it today? DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing with servers starting at just $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available, starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so that you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Just visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code KNOWHOW for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do for you. Again, that's DigitalOcean.com, DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code KNOWHOW in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of KNOWHOW. Hey, Brian, we've been talking a bit about switches and routers, you know, fun stuff. So how about we talk about a switch that's also a router, or a router that's also a switch?
All right. Now that you've let me know what a switch, the difference is between a switch and a router, let's just obliterate that.
Let's obliterate that. And we're going to obliterate that with this. We gave you a first look at this not too long ago. This is the Synology RT1900AC, when we gave you that little router rundown. This is a device that we saw at CES this year at the Synology booth. Remember, Synology makes NASes. I love their NASes. I live by their NASes. All of my content is now on NASes.
They've got great Synology NASes.
They do. But they've taken that experience and they've turned it into something that, you might want at home.
Okay.
I like this. So, Alex, why don't we go ahead and show them some love with the magic button?
This is Synology's first foray into routers. Known for their line of network-attached storage products, Synology brings a lot of that same experience and engineering know-how into the RT1900AC. On the outside, the RT1900AC looks well-designed, if a bit plain. The all-black styling hides most of the goodies, including a dual-core 1 GHz processor, 256 GB of DDR3 memory, three beamforming antennas supporting both 2.4 and 5 GHz 802.11abgnnac. A single WAN port and four LAN ports adorn the back of the unit, while a USB 3.0 port and an SD card reader are housed on the right. The left side of the RT1900AC sports a button for WPS and a physical switch to turn the wireless features on and off without the need to access the user interface. A quick boot and login reveals Synology's SRM, or Synology Router Management. Users of Synology NASs will immediately recognize the layout, and many of the functions have been duplicated from Disk Station Manager, to the point that being an expert in Synology DSM makes you an expert in SRM. Opening the Network Center reveals a well-organized set of screens and intuitive configurations. The status screen gives you basic real-time throughput, device status, and router resource monitoring. The wireless menu lets you individually configure the 2.4 and 5 GHz bands, as well as letting you create a guest wireless network that gives visitors or unsecured Internet of Things devices restricted access to the Internet without having access to the rest of your network. The Internet menu lets you configure for your ISP settings, while also giving you easy access to port forwarding, DDNS, the DMZ, IPv6 settings, and the 3G, 4G backup connection that runs through your connected USB dongle. An easy way to stay connected should your wired ISP take a bitnap. Parental controls allow parental units or concerned admins to schedule Internet allowed time with a simple menu that lets them set access parameters down to the day and hour and device, while the web filter will keep malware and objectionable material from making it onto your network. For those admins who want a little more control, Synology SRM also allows you to prioritize the traffic from particular devices on the network, perfect for mission-critical devices. And it gives you up to a month of recorded traffic stats, letting you sort through the top talkers and applications on your network. These settings and more allow you to easily configure your RT1900AC for router, AP, or client mode, turn on sharing of media connected to the USB port or the SD card reader, set up SMS notifications for network events, self-signed certificates, and dozens of features that most users won't care about, but geeks will love. One of the best features of the SRM operating system is a direct translation from Synology's DSM, the Package Center. The Package Center allows users to install, update, and maintain add-on features on the RT1900AC with minimal training. As of the recording of this review, only 5 packages were available, but as it shares this feature with Synology's NAS boxes, expect that to quickly increase. Download Station allows users to download files via BitTorrent, FTP, NZP, eMule, and a number of protocols directly to a USB-connected storage device, which can then be shared across the network. Media Server adds DLNA and UPnP functionality for streaming media from router-attached storage to TVs, media boxes, and network devices. DNS Server gives you your very own domain name system server, while SMB and enterprise users will appreciate the out-of-the-box Radius support. However, my favorite package has got to be Synology's VPN Server. This download gives you the ability to securely connect to your network from a remote location via PPTP, OpenVPN, and L2TP IPsec. In all, the $220 Synology RT1900AC is a rare exception in an otherwise boring field of routers. They've managed to make a router simple enough for the neophyte, powerful enough for the small to medium business, and geek enough for the super user.
I said it before, I'm normally not excited by routers. I mean, they're not particularly sexy.
But if you were to get excited about a router, this is the reason why.
This is the one. I mean, it's nice. And what I like about it, it is based on Linux. Mm-hmm. It is based on their DSM experience, the disk station manager. So Synology knows how to make good user interface. They know how to make security stuff.
Right.
I like that. I really like the VPN client, by the way. We're going to do a special on that because that is possibly the best, fastest VPN I've ever played with on a commercial device.
I thought it was pretty slick when I saw you could do BitTorrent in it.
Yeah, BitTorrent inside the device. And you said this during the break, which is it's a computer. Yeah, it is a computer. It's a Linux computer. They've put on a lot of handles to make sure that it works properly as a router.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I like it. So when do I get to play with it?
There's one more on the table, and I think Tanya has one on her table. So
Really?
I think that was supposed to go to the screensavers. Yeah. If you go to my screen, Alex, I want to show you a couple of things that I did not show off in the video, but we were asked about this. Someone said, is there a way for me to, like, on my phone, turn off my child's Xbox, PlayStation, whatever, when they shouldn't be playing anymore? Uh-huh. And actually, yes, there is. This is very cool. So you go into the network center, and if you go to traffic control, and if you hover over the device, there's this simple button I can press right here,
banned.
And the fun thing about it is it immediately knocks them off, either wired or wireless. It takes them out. and they don't come back until you unban them from the network.
I don't know if I like this or not. I'm sure my parents would have loved to have that back in the day.
It is a great little button. Now, there is no app. They could make an app because this is just a lead into the API.
Right.
So actually, maybe that's a project. We'll make
it
the
from
ban
your
button.
Phone. It's just a big red button.
That was easy. But there's a couple of other things. Geeks will really like this. In the administration, if you go to, where is that? LED. This sounds really stupid,
yeah,
but it's something that I like. I can say, turn off the LEDs, like, when I'm sleeping. And it's really as
simple. You can specify the time?
Uh-huh. So I just say, okay, from there to there, turn off the LEDs. So at night, make sure the LEDs aren't blinking.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, it sounds simple, it sounds stupid, but that's a cool feature. It's something that I'm like, oh, yeah. So they listened to their users who said, I'm tired of putting a towel over the top of the mm-hmm. router because the blinking lights keep me up at night.
Well, the router I have, you can turn them on or off, but you can't set, like, the time for it.
Yeah.
Which sometimes I walk by and I'm like, is it on? Is it working?
Right. So this is, hey, you know, I normally go to sleep at about midnight. I'm normally up by 6. So from midnight to 6, the lights don't turn on.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. something else I really like here is, where's that service? I can enable terminal services. So if you're one of these people who likes the command line, you can turn that on here. This is a Linux computer. So just turn on the SSH services. You can secure shell into the router mm-hmm. and give it Linux commands.
That's cool.
So yeah, you can really get down with this. There's so much in here. Everything from how the wireless is partitioned. How the wireless is partitioned to how I can turn on and off individual networks. I can turn on a guest network. I can turn mm-hmm. on just the 5 gigahertz band, just the 2.4 gigahertz band. I love the fact that not only is there a switch inside the user interface, there's a hardware switch. Oh, so I have this mounted next to the door, and I'm worried about, like, Internet of Things devices doing bad things along the way.
Yeah.
I physically turn off the Wi-Fi. The router stays on, but there's no more wireless.
I like that. I like that a lot.
They've put... I'm not used to seeing this. I'm not used to seeing, like, the first router from a company being a home run. Most of the time, it's the $40 router that they think that you're just going to buy because it's cheap. This is actually a quality product.
That is neat. It's got so many cool little features. I like how granular you can get with it, or you can just, you know, do a basic setup.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. This is something that I will actually buy and put into my parents' home because I can administer it from here. I can SSH into it.
It doesn't have a touchscreen on the front. Is that going to be okay? No, more stylish?
That's the other cool thing about it. I mean, there's nothing that they can do other than turn on or off the Wi-Fi.
Which, I mean, is pretty basic.
Which is pretty basic. Yeah. So for them, it's just a really good router that always works. For me, it's something that I can play with. In fact, we are going to play with this. This is the router that I used in... we did a Synology NAS as a digital video recorder.
Okay.
This is the router that we're using.
Sweet.
Yeah. Ooh. So, folks, if you are looking into a router, there was a video that we put. We put the entire VO video mm-hmm. on the YouTube channel about a week and a half back when they actually did the official release. Mm-hmm. When we did the first look at this, it actually had not yet been released. And I got an email saying, did you see the embargo that we put on the...
Sorry, I was blinded by the awesomeness.
I can't hide that much awesomeness in my head. I can't do it. I'm sorry.
Impossible.
Synology.
Impossible.
I just can't. Folks, when we come back, we're getting back into routing. We're going to talk a little bit about something that Steve Gibson brought up, which is what happens when devices or people misbehave on your network. Remember that whole thing that we did about the ARP? And the resolution protocol, address resolution protocol, so that you can find out where devices are on your network.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can abuse that. We're going to show you how you can abuse it. And then Steve Gibson's going to give us a way to keep it from being abused.
Oh, God.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I feel an imminent face melting.
There is a little bit of face melting going on, but you're going to like it because
it's
going to end up being easy. But before we get there, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How, and it's brand new. It's Unity. Now, let me ask you, Brian.
Uh-huh.
Do you suffer from this? This is something I have, which is I have videos and pictures on my phone.
Yes.
Maybe they sync up to the cloud, and maybe that syncs to my desktop.
Right.
Maybe I've got a bunch of videos on my desktop, maybe some other videos on my laptop, a couple on my tablet, probably a few in, like, a NAS here or there.
Yes. Actually, I was having a conversation like this with one of my friend's dads because he's like, oh, I've got all my pictures on my computer.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've got all my pictures on my phone. and I have a couple of backed up hard drives, but he's like, do you have any way of keeping it all together? And I was like, just make sure to do it right away. Like,
it's hope and dreams.
Yeah, right.
I'm pretty sure that nothing's going to die before I get my hands on it again.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, what people think about when they think of amalgamating their media. And that is, well, I hope it won't die before I get everything copied to where it needs to be.
Well, I kind of squirrel things away, and then I forget about them. So I've got, like, multiple hard drives on an old computer of mine that I've just, like, pulled things from, copied things from, and then they've kind of forgotten about it after
a
while.
Well, Brian, what if I told you that there was an easy way for you to never deal with that again?
I would love that.
And it's called Unity. Now, Unity is the easiest way to sync your media files across all the devices you may own, no matter what their operating system, no matter how they're set up to sync, no matter what they're carrying. Now, Unity is a free, easy-to-install personal media server that connects your devices so you can access your content on the go, again, without syncing, without uploading, and without configuring. You can visit getunity.com/knowhow, and there you can stream your entire music collection to your mobile device, even iTunes music. You can stream your entire movie collection when you're traveling. You can share any of your media with your friends, peer-to-peer, and your friends can stream it directly to your computer. You can install Unity on every computer you want to access, and Unity will unify all your media and files into one organized menu in your Unity app. You can also automatically merge iTunes accounts and libraries. I know there's a lot of you who have started multiple accounts, and it's always a pain to log in and out, remember where that particular piece of content was stored. Well, don't do that anymore. Just use Unity to unify your iTunes. You can post photos stored on your computer directly to Instagram. You can access all your Lightroom and Apple Photos libraries and photo albums. You can stream and share your GoPro videos. You can even use AirPlay to stream music or video to your TV straight from the Unity interface. Folks, this is the new way to have media. Don't worry about scrolling it away on one device or another. Don't worry about making sure that's accessible on your tablet and your PC and your phone. Just get Unity and you're good to go. Now, you can create your own private personal media server at getunity.com/knowhow. That's getunity.com/knowhow today and access all your media and files on your mobile devices for free. That's right, it's free. Folks, if it's free, why not give it a try? Why not see if maybe this is the way you prefer to consume your content? To learn more and get started with Unity, visit getunity.com/knowhow. Again, that's getunity.com/knowhow. And we thank Unity for their support of Knowhow. Hey, Brian.
What's going on?
All right, so we talked a little bit about all this.
Switches, routers.
Address resolution protocol, right? This is how you figure out where devices are on the network.
Right.
Okay. What if I told you that this works perfectly as long as there are no bad actors? Unfortunately, being a bad actor is a lot easier than it sounds.
Okay. Yeah. It's easy to be a bad actor,
it's
right?
It's super easy to be with this God-given
acting talent.
Let me show you okay. Where the problem comes
whatever
in
you
here.
Say, Calculon.
Yeah, okay. Now, this address resolution protocol, ARPing, it counts on the devices being honest about who they are.
Okay. Yeah. So, which isn't always true.
It's not always true. Remember how this found 10 after we wiped everything? It said, who is 192.168.1.100? Mm-hmm. And that broadcast went to all the devices and they were all silent. No one said anything until it got to the right one. It said, Oh, that's me. I'm 192.168.1.100.
They're all good actors. Yeah.
They're all good actors.
Yeah.
But what if device C2 said, oh, no, that's me. The problem is there is nothing in this protocol. There is nothing in this setup
to double
that
check.
Verifies.
Okay.
And in fact, what this can do is this could pretend to be multiple addresses. Let's say it's looking for 192.168.1.100.101.102.103.
So it could just be listening for any broadcast.
Yeah, it could just keep saying, me. Oh, yeah, that's me. That's me. Oh, that's totally me. Yeah, that's me. No.
So is there
no,
any or like a conflict if there's multiple machines saying that the same
there is,
thing?
But it's a race condition. Whoever gets there fastest gets the entry.
Okay.
So this now here's the big problem. This, so C2 could actually pretend to be the gateway, the router to which all of this is connected.
Right.
And so what it will do is all of these devices are going to say, oh, hey, where's 192.168.1.1? Because I have a packet to go to the internet, and I know I have to get to the gateway, right?
Right.
It says, oh, no, that's me. I'm 192.168.1.1. All of the packets now flow into C2, and then C2 forwards it to the router. But what it means is it gets to peek at all the packets before they go out.
That's sneaky.
It's totally sneaky, but the problem is there's nothing here to stop that. In fact, We covered this back in Know How. I think it was like episode 104. It was a long, long time ago. Jeez. We showed people how they could use a simple piece of security software called Cain and Abel to do what was called an ARP poisoning attack, an address resolution protocol attack. Alex, let's go ahead and start up the time machine by pressing the magic button. So I've got Cain and Abel loaded up. I already downloaded. I installed it. It's a very small program. It installs very, very quickly. Here's how it's going to work. What I need to do is I need to set up my attack. So the first thing I need to do is know what computers are on the network. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the sniffer tab right here. There we go. So that's my sniffer. And I want to find out what's on my network. So I'm going to hit the plus sign. Actually, I have to turn on the sniffer first. I'm going to turn on the sniffer, and then I'm going to hit the plus sign. And I'm going to say, search for everything that's in my subnet, all the computers that are on my network.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, there we go. So now it's told me it sees two different devices, 192.168.1.1 and 192.168.1.108. 1.1
is the router.
Is the router. Yeah. 1.108 is this other computer here.
Okay.
It's my second laptop. Okay, so now I know the computer's on their network. I want to intercept all the traffic that runs between this computer
and the router.
So what I do is I switch over to the ARP tab down here.
ARP.
Okay, and now I'm going to go ahead and this was from a previous run. Let me get rid of those. I'm going to add a new attack by hitting the plus. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say I want to see everything that goes between 192.168.1.1 and 192.168.1.108. Add that rule. There we go. Okay. Now I have to click this little button that looks like the radioactive symbol. And you'll see down below, you see it's starting the attack. So it's okay, full routing. That now means it's inserted itself. It's now the man in the middle. So any traffic that runs between the second computer and the router is now actually coming through this computer. Now, what can I do with that? Oh, I don't know. Let's do this. If you watch the previous episodes of Know How on Wireshark, we're going to start up Wireshark. Because now that we're receiving all those packets on this computer, I'm going to say, go ahead and tell me what's coming over the LAN. And there we go. So now it's showing me everything that's coming between those two computers. Huh. I'm going to put a DNS filter here, so it's only going to show me the DNS entries. Again, watch the previous episode of Know How if you want to know exactly how this works.
Right.
And now I'm going to go over to this computer, and let's go to twit.tv.
Yeah.
All right. So twit.tv. Okay. No, actually, you have to go back to the other computer. So, and now look at the DNS entries. It's finding all the different websites that are attached to that twit.tv. So anytime you type in twit.tv, you're getting all these different websites that are being called. But this is just to probe, and we're not actually going to probe through the data. It's just showing you. I'm now intercepting
what's coming from that laptop to the router.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead and come back to the wide shot. So this is now a man in the middle between this and the router that's under the desk.
This is now the tap, like the tap that we did in that previous episode.
Except it's a software tap rather than a hardware tap.
Right.
What we did before is we physically had a device that would give us a mirror for all the packets that were flowing through our network. Right. This is fooling all the devices on the network. It's saying, I'm the router, give me the packets you have going to the internet.
Wow.
Now, I can choose with this system, with Cain and Abel, I can choose to see the packets just flowing between two devices. So let's say the computer and the router, or computer A and computer B. Or
all
I could
them.
Say, give me everything on the network.
Huh.
It's actually really, really easy to do that attack. You saw me. That was just a couple of seconds. And actually, we've got RJP421 in the chat room saying, oh my god, Wireshark 2.0 is out. That video was shot a year ago. So
That's quite a while ago.
That was a while back. So we were playing with that a long time ago.
But then, okay, so how do you notice if this is on your network? It just slows things down, right?
You really don't. That's the problem. People say, well, if I've got a slow connection, I know there's a man in the middle. Not necessarily, because how do you tell the difference between a man in the middle slowing down your access and just the internet going slow, like we know it is?
Yeah, which seems to happen from time to time, especially if you have Comcast.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and it's not that there's a man in the middle. It's just that, okay, right now their router is oversubscribed. It can't get me the packets that I need in the time that I want.
Tell me how you fix it, Padre.
On the enterprise side, if you use some very expensive equipment, like I have in my lab, it does guard against ARP cache poisoning. So you can with high-end gear and sophisticated software keep something from beaconing and grabbing all of the addresses?
Because that sets off some bells and whistles saying, like, oh, this one machine can't be all these different ones? Or
precisely. Like, for example, the way that my switch does it, I think I've mentioned this before, is every time you connect, it puts you on your own VLAN. So you only see yourself and the router until it trusts you. And if it trusts you, then it moves you into the trusted zone. So that's sort of my way to do it. My way, the way that my enterprise switch does this, is I just assume that anyone who connects to my network is a bad person.
So you put them on a VLAN.
I put them on a VLAN, and they can act naughty all they want, and they can only affect themselves.
Okay.
Right. Uh-huh. But most of us don't have access to, you know, multi-$1,000 switches. We don't have access to enterprise gear. Luckily, Steve Gibson came up with a solution that I think actually is perfect, especially since a lot of these devices are not that expensive anymore. I mean, think about the WRT54G that we like so much, that Linksys. You can buy a router like that for $20. Mm-hmm. That's not the most advanced thing. It won't have the bells and the whistles of the RT1900AC, but that's precisely Steve Gibson's point. Hey, Alex, let's go ahead and find out how Steve solved for ARP cache poisoning.
We put each of the networks behind their own router. That constrains them to their own LAN, and the routers block Ethernet and block ARP and any way for them to get out. So, each of those networks behind their own router is able to send data out. Now, in the worst case, let's say now that one of them is malicious, it could do what I first proposed, is it could do a trace route. If it did a trace route, it would see its own router, then it would see the shared router, which is the Ying router, where these separate routers, WANs, are plugged into the LAN connections of this root router. It could determine that router's gateway IP. That could tell it that intermediate network's IP numbering, but nothing is on that intermediate network, this Y network, except other routers' WAN connections, and we know those are safe because those are what right now protect us in a single router configuration from the internet. Of course, safe, assuming that those routers don't have security problems or other problems. But this gives us what we want. It means that essentially by having a single root router with then spokes off to additional routers, each of those networks, and it doesn't matter now which one is secure, which one it's not, you could have three, you could have four, you could have as many as you want, all concentrating down to a single shared root router that goes out to the internet. And each of the interior routers completely isolates its network from all the others. That's secure. I've been shying away from going this far because three routers is a bigger pain than two routers, which is a bigger pain than one router. But the beauty is they're cheap now. Probably you've got some in the closet, so it may not be a problem. That root router could be a non-Wi-Fi router. In fact, it probably does not want to be Wi-Fi unless maybe you used it for a guest network. But it's really better if nothing, if it has no devices on it at all except other routers. Those are where you would want to have your Wi-Fi for your truly secure network and your probably not so secure Internet of Things network. Many of them are going to be hooked up with Wi-Fi, like the various Nest devices and so forth, you know, and the infamous light bulb that is trying to break into our network. That's the only way I can see of being secure. The beauty is this doesn't require any configuration, anything fancy, any settings of any kind. It's just it uses the basic NAT concept that all routers share, It blocks Ethernet, it routes IP, and it fully isolates the networks that are behind each of these routers so that they cannot see each other. And I don't think there is any, I don't think there's a simpler way to do this. Yes, if you have a fancy router, if you've got a firewall, if you're using pfSense, you know, if you really know what you're doing, you could pull this off with a single device. But for, I think, 99.9% of us, if we're going to start playing with Internet of Things devices, give that its own router, take your main router, and have them both feed into a router that goes out to the internet, then you've got isolation, and you don't have to worry about any of their settings.
I've always been reluctant to NAT a NAT.
Right. We've heard about bad things happening, though.
Yeah. I mean, technically, it will work, but whenever you, like, I actually do need port forwarding. I need to open up ports for particular devices, so that's a pain in the butt for me.
Right.
But the more I thought about this solution, the more I think Steve's really onto something, because, again, these are so cheap, and most of us have a couple of old routers sitting in the closet unused.
Yep.
In fact, if you can find a router that you can turn the wireless off on, that's even better. And this does afford you some pretty serious protection against bad actors on your network. Let me show you. We've actually got a quick drawing of what this looks like. So we've got router one. Router one would be the one that's actually connected to the internet.
Right.
Now, in the old setup, this is the only router that you would have. So this would be the one that has the wireless network that you connect to, so you can get out with
and
your phone.
All your devices connected to it, yeah.
The problem is, we already know from what we talked about with address resolution protocol poisoning, that any device on the inside of this router could do an ARP cache poisoning attack and suddenly be the man in the middle.
Pretend that, yeah, it was one of those devices.
Because there's no protection. It can pretend to be anything. However, what he's proposing is you take router one, it's connected to the internet.
Yeah.
There are no devices connected to router one other than
another router.
So I'm having router two, router three, and router four. I've added one. Yeah. He's got a three router setup. So it would sort of be router one, trusted network, untrusted network.
Okay.
Now, let's say, so these are all the endpoints. These are the clients. Let's say I've got a bad actor on router three. But router three is, say, it's the network I reserve for my Internet of Things.
Right.
So it's my security cameras. It's my
Nest thermostat.
My Nest
Ring
thermostat.
Doorbell.
My Ring video doorbell. All those devices would be on here. Let's say there's a bad actor here. It could still capture the traffic from all of the others. It could ARP cache poison all of the other computers here and act as the man in the middle. But it will not be able to see any of the clients in router 2 or router 4, because when it comes back out, if it tries to get here, it's going to hit the router. And the router's using NAT, and you cannot see past the NAT unless it lets you see past the NAT.
Okay.
So this will protect all of the clients in router 2 from anything in router 3.
And it doesn't even really matter if there's a bad actor on router 3.
Yeah, and this is, you know, you can subdivide as much as you need to get the protection that you want. So if you're really concerned, you could use 12 different routers. As long as you've got them coming back out, you have the ability to isolate a device to say, yeah, I will give you access to the internet. I will give you access to yourself, but you will have no access to any other device on the network. And actually, this is what I do. So my really expensive enterprise switch, that's what it does. I don't have to use physical hardware because the switch can do it all in software.
Okay.
Right, in a VLAN. But this is essentially creating a different VLAN for every single set of clients. Each of them only can see what's inside that VLAN.
But this is what normal people can do who don't have thousands of dollars to spend on enterprise equipment.
Precisely. Okay. If you've got a bunch of $20 routers, this is easy. And the only thing that you have to do, the only thing you have to make sure that you do, is don't have the same LAN subnet on every single one of these. So let's say this is 192.168.1.1. Don't have these also 1.1, 1.1, 1.1. Because what will happen is, when you try to access a device, it actually can forward back out to here, because this has the same address.
Right.
What you want is, this would be like 1.1. This would be 1.2, 1.3, 1.1, 2.1, 3.1, 4.1.
And that gives 100 IPs for each.
Well, 255. So 255, 256, but the zero.
Yeah, yeah.
All of those addresses are now available to you, and you will not have any routing problems. It is one of the easiest things to do. And I, you know, kudos to Steve, because I would not have thought about recommending this, because I'm always thinking, oh, VLANs.
Right.
And you know, like this, the Synology, this can do VLANs. So I could, I could separate these so that any device plugged into any one of these ports has no access to any of the other devices connected to any of the ports. But this is an expensive router. Now, this is $200+. What if I just had a bunch of $20 ones? I could get the same effect. And since it's all hardware, I don't have to worry about configuring. It's as he said, three dumb routers.
Okay. What would there be any conflicts if you're trying to, if say you're on router 2 and you wanted to talk to a device on router 4?
Yes. So if you want to do that, you have to start doing port forwarding.
Right.
Which we've done. We've actually covered that. Remember when we did the episode with the security cameras, we talked about how you could access multiple cameras behind a firewall, behind a NAT. In that particular case, you were suggesting the DMZ, which is bad because that means
that opens everything.
All those ports go to that device. What you could do is you could say, okay, I am actually, so the internal address on this is 2.1, 3.1, 4.1, right? So that's all those. This address on router 1 might be 192.168.1.2, 1.3, 1.4. I can set the forwarding rules here to say anything that comes in on the WAN port, port 6060 goes to this device. So that is more complicated, and you really don't want to open up any ports that you don't need to, because then you're starting to defeat the purpose of having this in the first place. Because if you do open up ports and you have a bad actor, and the bad actor starts scanning all of your internal addresses, it will find your open ports.
Okay.
Don't do that unless you have to.
So if the first router, router number one, got compromised, would it not be able to see anything beyond the other routers? Like,
well, where's, I mean, that's the thing.
How would it be?
Yeah, if router one gets compromised, it's going to kill everything.
Yeah.
Because this is literally the man in the middle. All the other routers talk through this router to get to the internet and vice versa.
Chances of that happening are...
Not great. Not good chance. And I would say make sure that router one of all of them is like the more sophisticated one.
Right,
you
that
want
makes
that,
sense.
That's take, the, like, the I would use the Synology for that.
Yeah.
Although if I had this knowledge, I wouldn't have to do the three router configuration because I could just do never mind. So just make sure you use a router that has updated firmware and you should be okay.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That wasn't actually as face melting as I had expected, but
We cut out all the face melting parts.
From security now.
It was about 20 minutes worth of face melt. It's good stuff though. It's good stuff.
Well, if there wasn't face melting in security now, it wouldn't be Steve Gibson now. Yeah.
Exactly. You kind of expect some. I mean, I sit and listen to Steve Gibson. It's always playing like in the background when I'm soldering.
Yeah.
And there's times where, like, how what.
What
did I just hear? Wait, back up. Dang it.
Did he say three dumb routers?
Oh, folks, we know that this has been a lot of information, and we're going to make sure that you get the notes. If you want to find out what I did with the ARP cache poisoning, you want to find out how switches versus routers works, that's all going to be in our show notes, which they can find where, Brian?
At twit.tv/KH. And, you know, I have a feeling we should have taken some pictures of your chalkboard. Maybe I'll throw some stills in there, show off your artwork.
No.
But you can go there, find past episodes, find all the links, everything we talked about today. Subscribe and or download of your choice.
Yeah. And don't forget that that's not the only place you can find us. In fact, we would prefer that you find us on our Google Plus group. Just go to Google Plus, look for Know How, and join almost 10,000 members of our Know How community, our know-it-alls. They are great for posting answers to your questions or giving you ideas for future projects. If you've got a project that you're particularly proud of, please, please put pictures, put videos. We may play it on a future episode of Know How.
Yes, be sure to show it off, and there'll probably be some questions about routers and things like that, too. So that would be a great place to talk about that.
Do your thing, yeah. That's also not the only place you can find us on the socials.
No, that's not. We're also on Twitter. If you want a behind-the-scenes look or you want to see what we're up to or what kind of crazy stuff we're doing. You never quite know what you'll see. Probably a corgi gif. But you can follow me at @cranky_hippo.
And you can follow me at @PadreSJ. And you can find our director.
Of which we would not be able to do the show without.
Yeah. What's his name again?
Jim. God, I wish I remembered.
Jim Gumbel. You can find him at...
Excuse me, Padre.
Yeah.
That's Alex Gumpel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why do we never get that right?
Don't care. So it's ANELF3 if you want to talk to Jim.
He makes the show happen.
He does.
He keeps us on time.
He really does.
Oh, right.
Oh, okay. Folks, also thanks to everyone who makes the show possible. Of course, to Lisa and Leo for letting us do know-how. For my esteemed colleague here, Mr. Brian Burnett, for giving us all the moral support that we need.
Oh, thank you.
Yes,
thank
it's, you. It's yes. one of the things. And of course, to you. Thanks for coming back each and every single week. Don't forget to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/knowhow. I am actually in Barcelona right now. I will be trying, if I can find the bandwidth, I will be trying to upload little vignettes from Barcelona onto the YouTube channel. It's a reason to join us. Again, youtube.com/knowhow.
Jealous.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasier.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how.
Go put a router behind it. Behind another router.
A router and a router.
On another
Routeception!
It's a router onion!
Ah!